Hello, and welcome to episode 39 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Kate, and I'm here with Chris and Kristen, and today we are discussing chapters 23 through 28 of Phasma, so about the third quarter of the book, where lots of crazy stuff happens.
Lots of murder. Yes! A lot of murder.
Escalates very quickly. I was not lying last episode when I said shit gets even crazier.
Right?
Yes. So, that's cool. But before we dive into the exponential amounts of murder, what are we all drinking today? Kristen?
Hold on. I'm pretty sure I was drinking this on the Poppy episode, which we recorded a million years ago, but just came out last week. But I am drinking, or this week, something like that. It doesn't matter. Because this is not coming out at any time soon. Time is a flat circle. I'm drinking Ecliptic Starburst IPA.
You were drinking that during the Poppy interview because I just listened to it today while I was running.
Yeah, I listened to it yesterday. And nice. I was like, I bought another six pack of it. It's not the same. Don't worry.
Oh, so it's not like that time I just had some swole wine for ever?
It's not like that time. You guys are drinking wine tonight, right?
We are. That Chris was loath to give me.
Oh my God. yes, we are drinking wine. I am not high on anti-anxiety meds this time, so that's always a plus.
And I am not on Vicodin. I stopped taking Vicodin several days ago, and Chris was still not give me a normal amount of wine.
Oh my God. This has caused such strife in our marriage, the amount of wine I poured her. She has a perfectly reasonable amount of wine in her glass now.
So you were saying that you agree that it was unreasonable before.
We're drinking a Montepulciano, which is obviously Italian, and I cannot pronounce the name, but we took a picture and it'll be on the Instagram.
I can probably pronounce
it.
Send it to me.
I want
to
know.
You're welcome to go into the kitchen and try and pronounce it, my dear.
Well, I'm attached to a lot of wires and with headphones and such right now, so yeah.
It's a problem.
I'm not gonna do that. Stop. Just stop. Please.
We're making Kristen feel so awkward right now, and I love it.
Oh, I'm just smiling because I'm always like, stop fighting. And Kate's like, don't tell me what to do.
I mean, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me how much wine I can have.
Oh my God.
Listen, as I said before,
As I said before we started
recording, this is an equal partnership in which I should have an equal share of the goddamn wine.
Except for Chris is three times the size of you, and Chris is just, like, very small, so it's a whole thing.
Listen, Chris was taking a nap during the last episode because he was high, so whatever.
This is true. I have no leg to stand on.
None of us ever do we?
Nah.
Between my jet lag and occasionally drinking six beers instead of eating dinner.
Yep.
And then recording this podcast.
Accurate. How is giving me wine worse than either of those?
Oh my
anyway.
God. Let's talk about Phasma.
The book and the person.
Should we? Let's do it.
The book and the character.
Yeah, so I wanted to start because we've made it through like two episodes without actually talking about Phasma.
I know, it's really impressive.
Right? And like, I feel like part of that was just because we felt like we didn't know enough about her. And I feel like now we know enough about her, and like my reaction, literally all I wrote in the outline for this point was, it's time to talk about Phasma. Sub-bullet, yikes.
I mean, that kind of, does that not say everything for people who have read the book? Because, oh my God.
Kate, did you finish?
I am not done yet, no.
Okay.
I guess.
Believe me, the yikes gets to be more capitalized.
Gets even more yikes worthy.
As I said, things really start to escalate here. There's still yet another level for them to go up, so.
How is that even possible? I'm very scared.
Just stay tuned.
Oh, Jesus. Well, yeah, so we start kind of, well, because apparently we're going to find out even more, but we start sort of answering the question I had last episode, which is, you know, what's Phasma's goal here? And her goal literally is just like, I'm going to get myself off this stinking rock and I'm going to do anything I can to make that happen.
So, I don't know. One thing that I found weird is that, I don't know, Kristen, do you feel like Phasma actually went through any character development in the book?
Thank you. What a great segue into agreeing with me, Chris. I actually don't think she really went through all that much character development. I think as evidenced by us not talking about her for the first two episodes of this book, I think we definitely find out more about her as the book goes on. But I don't equate that necessarily with character development. And then as we go towards the end of the book, I mean, I kind of want to revisit this and see what you guys think once we get to the wrap. But I think she's kind of unapologetically herself the whole book. I mean, she's really fucked up. And I think she's like a psychopath, probably.
Like, literally.
Yeah, especially given other stuff that you guys don't know yet. But okay, you'll see, I guess.
Oh, great.
Kristen, we're supposed to be discussing chapters 23 through 28.
I can't do that. But she did cut off the Uratu's head, which was badass.
Yeah,
that was annoying.
Yes, that was if you're listening to the last episode, that was the point where I texted Keek. I was like, Phasma did that. Which was a good time.
Right. I don't know. It seemed to me that the Sire people seem to think that Phasma went through character development. Like, do we need, like, a prequel to the prequel novel of Phasma? Like, I don't know.
So here's the thing for me, is that we haven't talked, like you said, we haven't talked about Phasma until this point because she's such an enigma. And because she's not telling the story and we are several degrees removed even from her. We still don't know who Phasma was. Like, we don't know anything about her. Like, we don't know if she went through character development, honestly. Like, all we have is that, like, people are saying she's changed, and it's like, okay. And part of the problem is that, you know, Siv's the one, really, who was telling the story to Vi, who's telling it to Cardinal and us. And Siv is already an unreliable narrator, because now we know that she's still on Parnassos, and she knows what happened to Phasma at the end once she left the planet. So she's already colored by this idea that, like, maybe from the beginning this is who Phasma was all along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's me being colored by that, obviously. But I don't know. I think, especially up to this point in the reading, you know, people are kind of like, oh my god, Phasma put, like, this helmet on. But I'm saying, like, hasn't she always kind of taken every advantage? That's kind of the picture that we've gotten of her, right? Is, like, she's always been, like, the most hardcore warrior. And it doesn't surprise me that she would want, like, superior stuff. But I don't know if we want stuff meaning, like, armor and weapons and all of those sorts of things. I think that's also obviously tied in with this other part of her that really wants to assimilate. And I think that's one thing that I would definitely say is up for debate. Like, is that a character trait that she develops during this story that Siv is telling us or not? I don't know.
Right.
Siv isn't telling it to us, but you know what I mean.
Right. I mean, I think it's clear from the beginning that she's always been ambitious, or why would she have stepped in at the very, very beginning when that random jackass killed their old man leader and Phasma and Keldo assumed leadership of the tribe. But yeah, no, I think that's a fair question.
Speaking of Phasma and Keldo, Kate.
Oh, I had
Oh, you had another point.
I had a sidebar.
Go for it.
No.
Sidebar nation.
Yeah. So one of the things I'm putting together, Keeks, listening to you talk, especially about Phasma, you know, taking the resources that she has available to her and using those to adapt to whatever the situation is that it's really interesting that one of the most, central facets of Sire culture is that warriors have masks. And Phasma you know, she earned a mask by proving herself to be a really powerful warrior. You know, Siv has one, Torben has one. But she swaps it for a stormtrooper helmet, which is, of course, another kind of mask. But after a while, she stops taking off the stormtrooper helmet. And it's just kind of this, not only has she abandoned her culture, but she was unknowable to begin with because she had this ferocious mask. And that's already yet another degree of removal. And then she has a stormtrooper helmet, which is totally unfamiliar to Siv, who, again, is telling the story. And she just won't take it off. And it's real creepy. And I think that's interesting. I mean, like, we don't even see her face in the films. Like we have that moment in The Last Jedi where Finn hits her and chips off a piece of it. And we have that cool scene where all you can see is her eye. But, yeah, no, we don't actually ever see her face.
Which was very Vader in Rebels.
Yes, and yeah. I loved right. it.
Very Twilight of the Apprentice.
I loved it.
Like, and I feel like people who are not watching Rebels are missing that, and I feel sad for them.
I'm trying to make Chris make a Rebels Vader, like, with the piece missing from the helmet for the 501st.
Yeah, you're going to be trying on that for a while. I do not have the money to make a Vader for the 501st.
I love
That's
you.
That's totally fucking so real.
But
so much armor.
Yeah. And, no, I mean, Christian, I think you really hit on an interesting point about Phasma and that, like, she always wants to assimilate. Like, Siv makes a point early in the story about how Phasma is a natural mimic, and she means it about Brendel's accent and how we get the clipped Gwendolyn Christie Phasma accent.
The very proper British
yeah.
core worlds accent
yeah.
in the Star Wars universe. Yeah,
exactly. But the weird, like, I don't know. I feel like Phasma's more than just a vocal mimic. I feel like we don't know Phasma's personality almost. Like, I feel like we don't know, or Phasma doesn't have a natural personality. I feel like she is such a chameleon that she just immediately has a sense of who is the strongest and latches onto that personality. And then when that balance of power is upset, she changes. Because look at, like, she was Keldo's, she's Keldo's sister, for God's sakes. And, like, she was completely loyal to him and helped a man who is crippled in a culture full of warriors lead, and lead well and comfortably and unchallenged. And she never challenged him. And then as soon as Brendel came along and there was a chance of a power shift, she switched her allegiance within a day.
But do you think that the reason behind that is because she has that ambition and because she's hardwired for survival? Like, those are personality traits.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, honestly. I'll be interested to see if we get any more glimpse of that in the last quarter of the book. Because that's an excellent point. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll get some more insight. I'm, like, over here biting my tongue, trying not to fucking say anything.
You're just holding your thumbs, like, la, 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 la.
Yeah, I'm, like, playing with the twist tie is what I'm currently doing, so I don't talk. But, yeah, I mean, I've already kind of, like, put that on our list for the outline to kind of explore. I don't quite remember what I said, but it's something to the degree of, is, you know, that is Phasma changing into someone who assimilates, or has she always been that? So I can't wait until you guys have read everything, and then we get to talk about it, because there's other stuff.
Cool.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, you can tell that the last quarter of this book is where they're saving a lot of action.
Oh hell yeah.
I was surprised that they already got off Parnassus, and so that, like, was kind of my hint.
I know, I was like, there's a whole quarter of this book left, exactly. Like, what the hell?
Speaking of Keldo, I need to just stop saying speaking of. It's the only
Speaking of queer.
Kate, since we brought up Keldo and Phasma together and they're ruling together, do you want to dive in a little bit about how they, well, we talked about how they diverged, but do you think either of them was right in their diverging from one another?
I mean, so here's the question I have, because during that huge battle in the, basically the no man's land with all the great, lovely radiation and delicious things that are so good for your health. There's this moment where Siv talks about how they were both wrong. Because Phasma has completely abandoned her people, and she's become, she's become, or she's only showing now. Civ still doesn't know, this completely ruthless side of her that's willing to, you know, do anything to get ahead and to leave with Brendel. And then, of course, there is Keldo, who decides to take literally everyone in his entire tribe, go on a wild goose chase across the goddamn desert, and you know, wage war and keep doing that, even though they're obviously literally outgunned. And then he, like, has Frey, like, the only child of her generation in the Sire, and he's using her as a human shield. And it's just this completely outrageous scene, but when they're talking, it's just like, you know, Phasma has this moment where she's just like, you weren't bold enough to have a vision that could have saved this entire civilization. And he's just like, yeah, but you fucking stole away in the night and you betrayed all of us. That's not cool either. And so, I don't know. It's this weird moment where it's just like, it doesn't take sides, but it's almost asking you, like, which sibling are you aligned with?
Yeah, and then there's kind of like the wrinkle that not only does Keldo come with everybody who is in the Sire, but he also comes with all the Claws.
Right.
Which were obviously like their natural enemy prior to that point. Like, to our knowledge, like, they had gone in and tried to steal the kiddo in that whole cool badass scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he could have taken that kind of kinship that they were feeling in that moment where, you know, but Phasma had taken both tribes' only chance of getting off planet and used that to build their weird little wasteland empire or whatever the hell. But he didn't do that. So that's a problem. And anyway, the question this all leads me to is, did either of them really want to save their people? Because they say they did. But oh God.
I feel like it's pretty clear Phasma didn't. Like, it's pretty obvious that Phasma was only ever in it for herself. I don't know. I go back and forth on Keldo, because for me, Keldo, I think in general, Keldo was dealt a losing hand and he knew it, and he was rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic for his entire chieftainship. And particularly after Phasma left, I think I don't blame him for following Phasma, because I think Keldo recognized that when she left and she took the detractors and their best warriors, they were all dead, and the best thing for the tribe was to go out in a blaze of glory.
It's real fucked up.
I have one more thing about that. Where this theory falls apart is where Keldo chose not to even attempt to go with Brendel.
Right.
Because if Keldo had tried to lead the entire Sire clan, then they might have made it to Brendel's ship with more people. And they may have actually had a possibility of getting off world. Whether or not Brendel would have left them is a different question. But they may have... There was theoretically a possibility for Keldo to lead them and try and get them off world, and he did not take it. And so that's where my theory falls apart.
Well, here's the thing, though. Because what Phasma is basically accusing him of is of being a weak leader who can't look towards the future. And, you know, Sif knows Keldo about as well as anybody because, you know, reasons.
They boned.
Yes, sexy reasons.
Sex reasons.
Yes. And she knows that Keldo has it in him to be really smart and protective of, you know, basically their family, that, meaning, you know, everyone in the Sire. And she thought that right at the beginning when, like I said, that Jackass killed the original leader. And Sid was like, Keldo might be crippled and we don't necessarily value that, but we value his mind. And it's almost like as soon as Phasma left, he like lost part of himself, you know, because he lost his sister and then he just started not thinking all that clearly. Like, he lost his muscle and therefore he had no authority, and he just got real desperate and just went bonkers. It was just like, let's go into the fucking desert.
I totally think that going after Phasma was self-preservation as well. Because I think regardless of whether or not the tribe would have died, he would have been a goner as soon as things got bad.
True.
Without Phasma there.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to take a point that bridges both of your points, because it's what I do. And it's the way my brain works, because I had this point earlier when me and Chris started talking at the same time. So, you know, I'm not just bullshitting you. But I think the truth is around both Phasma and Keldo is they don't know what saving their people looks like. They have no map for that. All they know is that everybody's fucking dying and shit is getting realer and realer every day. And they can't really, like, see a way. Like, for a while, it was like, okay, if we can, like, keep this child, like, we, okay, there's a child. If we can keep the child safe, like, that's what we're supposed to be focusing on. But once Phasma leaves, we don't really know what's going through Keldo's head. Because I think he knows that they might be fucked without their best warriors, right? They're going to either get wiped out by the claws or they're going to get wiped out by the weather or something. You know, not that the warriors would help them with that, but they're not only the warriors, they're also, like, the strongest people. So if they're all going to move en masse, like, those are the folks who are going to help the lesser people and the kids and whatever. So I think, like, Phasma obviously thought, well, in a very selfish way, but I think she really did think that, like, reaching the ship was a way out for her people or the planet or something. I mean, she obviously thought that for herself. But I think Keldo kind of didn't want to admit that she was right in a lot of ways. But also there's, like, you know, he was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. He didn't want to admit to, you know, he didn't want to look like a bad leader by saying, like, hey, we should probably go do the thing that Phasma said that we should do, that I said we shouldn't do, because otherwise we're totally fucked. But also, you know, what are they going to do? They don't know what radiation is, but that's obviously what's happening to the whole planet and fucking it up. And it's not like they had some grand plan to save the, like, their whole civilization anyway.
Right. I mean, it's not like a nuclear holocaust gets better in any, like, appreciably quick amount of time anyway.
Yeah. And that's why I say that, like, I wonder if Keldo was smart enough to realize from the jump that the planet was dead and so were they.
Mm.
But again, then he was too weak to go with Brendel. So it becomes a paradox.
Right.
Couldn't find that word for a sec.
We want to take a wider lens on this. Chris, I know you wanted to talk about, speaking of nuclear holocausts, talk a little bit about the planet itself and why it is super, super fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, could we... I'm enjoying this book, but could it have been a little bit more heavy-handed that Parnassus is a parable for Earth?
I don't know. I just, you know, I'm just thinking about, like, Trump and Kim Jong-un with their fat fingers, like, just hovering over the big red button. And, yep.
Well, and just the fact that it's, you know, the mining, the raw materials companies that are ruining it and that caused this nuclear accident.
Right.
That we now, you know, it was unclear at the beginning whether it was global warming or whether it was some sort of nuclear accident, or maybe it was both. Who knows? But, we know at least that there was this big nuclear disaster, and it's, you know, it really is a parable for Earth. Parnassus used to be this lovely place, this vacation spot, and it is very not now.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my God, I'm just, like, losing all my points as soon as I am going to say them.
Should have poured you less wine.
I have only started drinking this wine because I was drinking kombucha because health. So you know what? Don't smile
please
at me.
Stop. Please stop fighting.
Don't smiling at me. I don't like it.
Stop loving me, husband.
Fuck. What was I going to say, though?
Earth. Parable for Earth. Parnassus. Beach.
Thanks. That's not helpful.
Vacation spot.
Nope.
Global warming, nuclear holocaust.
I just wanted to point out that we've seen a whole lot of mining companies destroy a whole lot of planets in a whole lot of different ways. This is one we haven't had yet, so that's super fun. It's kind of interesting because, you know, in the Star Wars universe, you would think that they would have figured out, like, you know, cold fusion by now. They would be super good because of all the technology they have. But no, there are still just, like, nuclear meltdowns and, you know, bad uranium equivalent things that can explode. And it was fascinating. It was unexpected for me. I think.
Absolutely. That to me was shocking.
I thought it was climate change. Absolutely. Especially because they just kept talking about the rising seas and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. It never occurred to me that nuclear technology was still a thing in the Star Wars universe.
Totally.
Until we got there. And I don't know. I felt like part of Brendel's surprise was like, they're still fucking nuclear? Like, kind of backward ass company was this?
Right. I mean,
I wonder what they were mining.
Oh, you know what?
They were probably mining uranium.
Yeah. Or the its equivalent.
Space uranium.
Yeah, but then what do you use that for?
One of the five Death Stars.
Yeah, weapons probably.
I guess.
Chemical weapons.
Don't at me. I'm sure it was for the Death Star.
I mean, yeah, because I mean, who loves?
Well, no, it would have been for the Old Republic.
Oh.
Because it would have been 100 years before.
Oh shit! So do we know that 100 years?
It was over 100 years. A couple hundred years.
It was about 180.
Oh.
Yeah. They said something along those lines. Yeah, they said something along those lines.
She loses it again.
It was something along those lines when they were in Aratu. But yeah, what the fuck would the Old Republic need radioactive
space uranium?
Yeah, I mean, because it's not like you could necessarily affect things with radiation poisoning during.
Well, and I don't think it was space uranium, because when they're at the first mining facility, like, they're mining something. We don't know what they're mining, but it's, like...
Well, you mine uranium.
You mine uranium like that?
Yeah.
I don't know anything. Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm bullshit.
Only reason I know that is because Virginia politics.
Woo.
Ew.
Yeah, we have uranium in the Blue Mountains.
We have what?
There's uranium in the Blue Mountains. This is a whole thing. You didn't know this?
Oh, God, I'm so glad we're moving soon. Horrible.
Yeah, in the Blue Ridge Mountains. The Blue Mountains are Lord of the Rings. The Blue Ridge Mountains are in Virginia.
I wasn't gonna say anything, but you caught it. I thought you were putting another. Sometimes Chris likes to put Easter eggs in there, but he also usually he's white, so he usually likes to tell you.
I mean, this is true. Also, for the record, I was listening to the episode with Poppy Ashright, our dear friend who we were interviewing, and I made a Lord of the Rings reference and said at least one of our viewers will get that, and sure enough, one of our listeners will get that, and sure enough, exactly one of our listeners messaged me about that reference, which I really appreciated.
At Shannon,
shout
Joy
out
26.
Shannon Joy.
At Shannon, why did you do that? You shouldn't let him know that you care or listen to him. Just builds him up. sorry, Dad. I love you.
Keeks, don't fight with me.
Oh my god!
I'm sorry. It's a shtick now. It's a whole bit we do on the pod where we shit on
See,
Chris.
Now I made you feel bad about it. This is adorable.
Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad.
It's like I've never felt bad about making Chris feel like shit.
Hell no. Why would I?
You guys want me to make my points now? Because we're
yes.
kind of talking about them.
I'm the awesome one in this relationship, so you know what?
You are.
Yes, Case, go.
Okay. Speaking of... Oh my god, I literally can't not do it.
Speaking of mining.
Speaking of parables for Earth. we see a mining company that didn't face any consequences for the natural disaster they had. Which has never happened here in the world when oil companies have killed lots of wildlife and things.
Or anything.
There's always consequences. I know. I'm just thinking like...
BP.
I'm just thinking energy specific.
BP stuff and the pipeline.
Yeah, and natural gas mining and...
Yeah, totally.
It made me do an angry.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with, like, the Aratu city. We don't ever learn, like, the real name of it, right? They just call everything Aratu.
I think they called it Aratu Station.
They did.
Aratu
Station. I think
Station.
That was, like,
okay,
the actual
cool.
name of it. Kind of like the first
and that's
one was
like
Terpistor.
Where they...
Terpistor.
Got it.
Terpistor.
Terpiscori
Station.
Ooh. Ooh, that wasn't pronunciation.
Terpsichore.
I was actually legitimately weirded out that it was called Uratu Station because, ooh, fun nerd fact for you guys. The other stations are named after one of the muses from Greek mythology. So I was like, what the fuck is Uratu? True.
I don't know.
So anyway.
I'm going to do a Google real fast.
All right.
Please hold.
Yes.
Because now I'm really.
Do it.
How is it spelled?
A-R-R-A-T-U. So while you do the Googles, I just wanted to point out that while I'm talking about mining and its horrible, horrible consequences, especially when you are involving nuclear materials, is that this is, I wonder if this was intentional, but this is a pretty strong statement against capitalism. Honestly, because
it really is.
Yeah, like as you said, they're still going 180 years later, not a care in the world. Because they're profitable and they have many clients, and I bet those clients are extremely fucking powerful.
I wonder if it's like a, because Uratu just brought up a bunch of stuff on Wikipedia.
Blessings.
Because I don't think it's a thing. But I wonder if it's like a.
There's Uratu. That's a.
I'm like, does this have something to do with spiders? Was my first.
That's not wrong. Uratu is a.
It doesn't matter. We'll post something about it if I ever remember. Oh, is it? Well, then that probably.
So it's probably just some weird bastardization.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, sorry. I asked the question. I figured it out. Anyway, sorry.
Thanks for figuring it out, Kate.
Ooh.
I did a Google and could not figure it out.
Ooh, but. Uratu as a name in ancient Greek means desired or lovely, which is fitting because they make all the pretty fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Fabrics.
All right. Sorry. That was my English nerd tangent for the day, and we can move on.
No, I love it. Oh, yeah. And you just kind of made this point, Kate, but the other point that I wanted to bring up is like those fuckers are still in business. Like somehow I was still surprised by that.
Sweet summer child. Like,
yeah, well, fuck. But Hux was like, well, because also it was like, I guess I knew and to some degree that it was like in the Old Republic, and I'm like, well, it's way past that, so maybe this doesn't exist anymore. But no, it totally does. And old Hux was like, nope, they're super profitable. And did Civ say like, can something be done about this? And he was like, yeah, we'll see.
He's just like,
absolutely not.
We'll see, and or we'll just absorb them and be more horrible somehow.
Yeah, that's like...
Yeah, that is what he said.
Yeah, what I got is like, yeah, we'll just fucking take them over. I'm like, great, that'll help everyone.
Woo!
Yeah, that'll really fascism. Solve a lot of problems.
Yes. Hooray.
Since we're talking about all the fucked up shit, Kate, do you want to, all the environmental fucked up shit, do you want to now talk about all of the social fucked up shit?
Sure, why the fuck not? Because this is already a very cheerful episode, as it always is.
At least we haven't talked about trauma yet.
Give it a couple episodes. I'm sure we're going to talk about trauma in the wrap up.
Yeah, because
spoiler alert.
I'm stunned. Yeah, so as I was talking last episode about how compelled I was by the creepy, weird, crazy droid civilization in Terpsichore Station that they just completely wiped out with basically a few clicks of a button. And of course, it was something that foreshadowing the destruction of the entire Sire and Claw population. Like, it's just, they completely decimated. And I just wanted to talk about how Brendel Hux is basically a walking, talking smallpox blanket, and holy fuck.
Yeah, right? Also, that last scene, they're not last scene, I guess, but the scene, the final scene on Parnassus with the battle, like, that was fucking straight out of Zulu.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awful. But yeah, no, I mean, basically what I wanted to say was that these, you know, they're these people who are living in this primitive civilization, and it's almost one of those, their parallel on Earth is one of those you know, tribes in Papua New Guinea or in the Amazon who are, you know, quote unquote untouched, that they haven't had contact with modern society ever. And I'm pretty sure none of those exist anymore. I'm pretty sure absolutely all of them are aware now that there are other people out there and that it's not just them. And, you know, we have fancy things like cell phones and clothes made by machines and stuff like that. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, as soon as you make contact with another society, you can't, you know, there are no take backsies in real life or here. I'm serious. Like, you just, you can, it's...
You're not wrong. I'm just laughing at the way that you phrased it. And I don't know why I am, because I'm me and phrase everything in a real stupid way. So continue.
No.
Oh, yeah?
But yeah, no, like you can't, it can't, there, as soon as the thing is touched, like, you can't make it pristine anymore. It's just, you just can't do it. And furthermore, you know, it's the story of globalization, except, you know, obviously on a much wider scale, because we're talking about the entire galaxy of Star Wars here. But, you know, they adopt their weapons, their clothing, you know, their language, their, you know, it's the thing that's happening. It's this horrible, horrible slow decay that's finally just winds up becoming an entire just like blow up, and they're just gone.
So what does that mean? Yeah. What does that mean for Phasma's character?
I mean, I guess if we want to talk about character development, like, she's not Sire anymore. She's First Order.
She's basically, you know, the point of Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe, which was like the book about, famously about, you know, the, again, this is very hard to do without being offensive, because it is intentionally such an offensive concept, which is why this is like such a flashpoint. But essentially, she betrayed her own people for her personal benefit to get in good with the First Order, or to get in good with the white people and the colonizers and the slave owners of the world, of the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah, it's awkward. Ooh.
It's not great.
Ooh.
Yeah, it there's a whole lot of levels to Phasma. There's Ooh. More levels than First Meet the Eye.
And y'all aren't even done the book yet. You just wait.
I know, right?
So what's the utility?
Sorry, I'm so annoying. I'm never reading ahead again.
Oh my god. So what's the utility of using that offensive ass trope then here?
I would need to finish the book.
Okay.
Honestly.
Yeah, finish the book and you'll. It's
person shut up.
Nope.
Because I'm just like, yeah. Because that's just yeah. Now I feel real squeaky. So that's, well, anyway. Hey, Chris, you want to talk about the First Order?
Oh, golly, do I. I was so struck by the irony of this book. And obviously, it was ironic to us as we were reading it, because we know the First Order's not good. But you have this egalitarianism of the First Order that we talked about in previous episodes.
Quote, unquote.
Oh, yeah, no, heavy air quotes. That we talked about in previous episodes, with Cardinal being, you know, so, you know, all these children will have a role in the galaxy. And Brendel being like, you know, standing at the nuclear, you know, where the nuclear blast went off, and standing in Aratu Station and being like, too many people died here. Like, so heroic, so egalitarian, man of the people, really, you know, just feeling the burn on Parnassus. And it's just, it's such a farce. And it's so, like, you feel bad for Siv, because the last thing that she experiences with Brendel and Phasma is just the shattering of that image of that they are, in fact, even worse,
right, and
than
I mean,
life on Parnassus, because they betrayed her and left her because she was too weak.
And also, I mean, Vi telling that to Cardinal is also shattering his vision of it as well. Like, I obviously on a whole lot of different levels, but he's the one who works with the kids, and they threw away Siv, but they threw away her baby, too.
Ooh, question, though.
Okay.
Because that's a great point. It just got me thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Do we believe this story?
Oh, shit. Like, what? Did Vi make us
yeah,
all
like, did Vi embellish this for propaganda purposes to try and turn Cardinal?
Huh.
Fuck, man.
I mean...
Questions of reliable narrators.
Huh.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, and we have to think about that, because the story, if it's real, is filtered through so many... allegedly through so many different places.
Yeah, and told under duress.
Yeah, great duress, I would say. Huh. Well, I'm sure we're going to get that answered.
I would think so, yeah.
But that's...
I want to know what happens to Frey.
Well, they have a whole fucking quarter of the book left, I assumed. Anyway, that's an intriguing thought. Oh, Keeks, you wanted to say a little bit more about Hux, too, didn't you?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think... So we have all the stuff that Chris referenced, where, like, you know, Hux is being all high and mighty, and he's all, too many people died here, blah, blah, blah. But then he, like, kills that entire droid population so that they stay alive and kills, quote-unquote, I don't know. It's, you know, we can debate the humanity of humanoid droids until the cows come home, but... one of the most striking lines from him in this section, I thought, was I don't remember what the question was, but it was when they were in Aratu Station in like the prisoner holding area, and Hux's answer was, "I'm bored." And yeah. I'm just like, first of all, in order to be bored in this situation, you have to be really, really confident that you're not gonna fucking die, which is very naive, like, given everything else that we see in the scene. Two, you have to, like, be very comfortable with this kind of, like, suffering and fucked upness, which, like, we know is the case because he's in the First Order. And, like, three, you just have to be so fucking detached from reality that, like, you can say, "I'm bored." I mean, if we think he's being genuine, but I think he's always kind of, like, pretty frank. He doesn't do a great job of, like, hiding his emotions, in my opinion. I think he's pretty much just like, no, yes, maybe. Like, this is what's going on, and I am a powerful person in the First Order, therefore everything will be fine.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think he has no filter because he doesn't have to have a filter. Like, he is...
Right.
I mean... If we've been talking, and not just us, like, a lot of people have been talking about the parallels, of course, between Star Wars and, you know, what's going on in the country right now. And what is he if not just, like, the height of white male privilege? Like, that's just who he is. That's just what he embodies. And Keeks, the point where you're referencing where he says that he's bored is when Vlad is telling them, "You better be entertaining or the Ratu's gonna let you starve to death." And he's just, you know, like, "Don't bore him." And Hux is like, "Well, fuck you, I'm bored. Like, what about me, you know?"
I knew it was like then, but I didn't, I think there was like a specific question he asked, and I'm like not remembering what it was, but it doesn't matter.
I just loved it because it reminded me of 30 Rock when, like, Liz Lemon and the writers are, like, describing, like, all their, like, problems and, like, just huge, like, massive fears to Jack Donaghy. And Jack Donaghy's like, "This is boring. I'm bored now."
Great.
Just reminded me of that. Just, like, a complete detachment from the suffering of others.
Great. Nice.
All right. Well, I think that takes us through everything we wanted to talk about.
I'm emo. God.
I know, right? It made you a lot more emo than you expected it to, didn't it?
It kind of did, though. Like, well, holy fuck. Man. And according to Keeks, it's only going to get worse. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Is excited the right word?
I'm excited, yes.
I mean, I'm anticipating reading more. I just...
And what I'm excited for is that next episode, we're finishing Phasma, reading chapter 20. Yeah, I like that transition. We're reading Phasma, chapter 29 through the end of the book. That's for next week. And since we only have a couple weeks left, we want to give you a chance to get our next book in our list, which is finally going to be Aftermath by Chuck Wendig. We're very excited to start reading this, so stay tuned.
This just in, a question from the listeners, Chris. Is it just the one book or all?
It is just Aftermath, trilogy? Just the first Aftermath book.
Great. That was really from me, but
nice. The listeners. All of our listeners named Kristen Cerisi.
That's right. Oh, and I found the passage. Sorry, and this is who I am as a person.
No. Hey, man, I eat the shit up, as you know.
He gets asked, if you're troublesome, he wishes you to suffer in an amusing fashion. If you're interesting, he wishes you to be entertained. So I ask you, my drab friend, are you troublesome or entertaining? Brendel huffed a sigh and glanced around the room as if he'd expected something better. I am bored. Like, that's like what makes it so fucked up. He like looks around the room too and he's like, well, all these people are about to die. I am so bored.
Right? Totally.
Ugh.
I've seen this so many times because of the First Order.
Hooray. Oh, Jesus.
Thank you for indulging me.
No, it's good. It's
good. Of course.
I'm actually really excited to be reading the books in the specific order, reading Aftermath right after we read Phasma, because Chuck and Delilah are legitimately, like, best friends, so I just want to see... What?
Chirk.
Oh, yeah, Chirk!
Chirk, yes. Chirk is literally Chuck... It's based on Chuck Wendig.
Yes. Which is the best.
It's so beautiful.
Isn't it great?
And there's a character in... I think Empire, a minor character in Empire's Name named like Delilah Dason or something.
So it's their friendship is
Chuck, that's very, very thinly veiled, buddy.
Their friendship is adorable, and I'm into how they're bros. So yeah, no, I just obviously they're different people, they're different writers, but I just, you know, obviously they get along and their senses of humor mesh well, so I'm interested in seeing what's up there.
Yeah, definitely. And as we have more thoughts about this, as we finish Phasma and start reading Aftermath, you can follow along and hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at BookWarsPod. Shoot us an email, bookwarspod@gmail.com. And this, more than anything else, please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to the Book Wars Pod and to Tachi Station Radio on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher. It is the best way for people to discover the show, so we really would love for you to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And also, this is a new ask for us, but now that we're a part of Tachi Station Radio, we would love it if you would be able to, if you're able to donate to the Tachi Station Radio Patreon. This is, you know, the Tachi Station Radio Network. This Patreon covers the whole thing, and it really does help us cover our hosting and production costs for the show. And so if you enjoy the show, if you like listening to us every week, if you have even $1 a month to throw on Patreon, that'd be amazing.
And, you know, we get it if you literally don't, because...
And if you don't, that's fine, too.
Because that's super real. But I would like tributes of a good Kinnear fanfic if you come across any of you. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, Kate's not okay. Rebels comes back in, like, less than a week.
Oh,
yeah,
Rebels is going to be back by the time this comes on.
Rebels is going to be back by the time this is
released. So this might be posthumous from Kate. It's fine.
May I rip in peace, guys.
Rip in peace. And with that, our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Buter Design. Thanks so much to the Tachi Station Radio Network, our parent network. And for Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris. We will be talking to you about the end of Phasma next week.
No, I do.